This show furnished by Sid Levine.
Happy Labor Day, everybody. It is a fantastic weekend, but what a week we've all had. Three-digit temperatures in Los Angeles and the surrounding cities. We are experiencing the largest fire in Los Angeles history. The horrific flooding in Texas. Indeed, what a weekend. What a week. The firefighters in Los Angeles, let me just put a shout-out to those guys. And the rescue workers in Texas, all I can say is God bless all of you. If you can, make a donation to the Red Cross. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or 1-800-435-7669. And also to help all the pets and the animals affected by the flood in Texas, call the ASPCA, 1-800-628-0028. Again, what a week and weekend we have had and are having. All right, everybody, we've got a great show for you tonight. I would like to really get into it right away. I would like to introduce to all of you one hell of a fantastic actress. She is just a fantastic person. She is a transgender actress that I've had the honor of representing for about 4 years, and her name is Julie Ray Goldstein. Welcome, Julie. Thank you for being here. Okay, so Julie, tell me a little bit about yourself. When and how did you get into acting?
That's kind of a complicated question.
Now I'm on. That's kind of a complicated question. I actually started, I didn't have that spark that a lot of people say they have, that growing up they knew they wanted to act. I never had that inclination at all. And then when I got into college, I started getting into anime, which sounds like a weird segue. But I did start going to a lot of conventions and meeting people, and I had an interest in doing voice acting. And I spoke to a couple people who worked in the industry, and they had heard my voice and heard a couple things that I'd done and were like, yeah, you should totally get into it. And that's where I started doing voiceover and started doing theater, got my theater degree, and I moved down here specifically initially to do voiceover and animation and video games, because at the time when I moved down here around 2005, 2006, it didn't feel like there was a place for trans actors on camera. So it never really occurred to me that that would be a possibility. So I spent years working in video games, in anime, animation, voiceover. And it was probably in, I want to say, 2007, 2008 with Candace Cain's role in Dirty Sexy Money that I kind of started to realize it's like, wait a minute, there is a place for us. And I started doing theater again, started doing a couple web series, and shortly thereafter is when I met you and started playing in the big leagues, as they say.
Well, you're a fantastic actress, Julie. How is it in the community, being a transgender actress? How is it as far as auditioning, the process, and what type of response do you get? How is it?
I think for a lot of the roles that are specifically written as trans characters for trans actors, there's still a little bit of kind of a learning curve, I want to say. Whenever I go to an audition where there are other trans actors that are people that I know throughout the community, there's always a conversation in the waiting room where people are somehow talking about, hey, is this right? Is this the positive type of representation we want? Is there something wrong here? And that seems to be a common question that keeps coming about because it's still so new. And I think recently there are so many questions and backlash regarding cisgender, which means non-transgender.
Right.
Actors playing transgender roles and what exactly that means and how it affects the community and people the transgender community as a whole, not just actors, that we're very cognizant of the role that we have right now in this time and place, especially with the current political climate and the current social climate, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. that we're very cognizant that this is a very important era, and I think we're all kind of walking on coals. We don't want to make a misstep, and that's why there's so much concern. That's why we feel the need sometimes to discuss whether something is positive or not and kind of bring that up as it comes along.
How do you feel about Jeffrey Tambor winning 2 Emmys and Jared Leto winning an Academy Award for men playing women as opposed to...
There have been some very strong wins, and there are still embers that are as much as 1,000 degrees.
I don't know what that was. Something cut into us here. But what is it... how do you feel about non-transgender men and women playing these roles and winning awards for them? Why don't they just use transgender actors and actresses for these? How do you feel about that?
There's a lot of different complexities in this question. And the biggest thing is that a lot of the violence that does occur towards transgender people in the U.S. and around the world, and it's an epidemic. It really is an epidemic. You see the murder rates of transgender people as opposed to the cisgender population, and they're astronomical. And the main reason for that is because there's this misconception that transgender women are just men, or transgender men are just women. And the problem with a cisgender actor playing a transgender role is that they'll have that vision of themselves, or people will see this transgender woman on screen, and then they'll go out and do publicity and win awards, and you see the complete opposite. You see the transgender woman is really a man, and that's the kind of misconception that is really dangerous at this time. I think a lot of people are starting to see that, you know, maybe in the future that would be possible. This is not the time for that, with such little transgender representation and such few opportunities out there for transgender actors. This is kind of an opposite thing, is that when I talk to a couple different casting directors about reality TV, a lot of them will have said to me, you know, think about the people you idolize and think about if they ever did reality TV, or where, how many people that you idolize in reality TV ended up doing something else. And the really weird thing is that doesn't happen with cisgender actors. Usually reality TV is kind of that dead end. But if you look at all the transgender actors that are out there, they all come from reality TV. I had this revelation a couple months ago, and I think I'm one of the only transgender working actors out there who has never done reality TV.
Interesting. Roles that are non-gender, if you were to be, be a worker at Starbucks, or be a policeman, or be a doctor. I mean, it doesn't matter what gender plays that, yet there's still the problem of hiring a transgender person for that. And in order for something to make progress, for this to make progress, is that you have to start somewhere, and then hopefully it'll lead to bigger roles. Because when you have Jeffrey Tambor or somebody that gets a lot of press because they win a couple of Emmys, yet they're being interviewed, you see they're men. Mm-hmm. And, why not represent it correctly? Hollywood has the responsibility as a great storyteller to represent things correctly.
Well, in that sense, I'm reminded of something. I believe Stordal and Terry were the casting directors for Angel years ago, and I had the opportunity to speak to them a couple years ago. And it's interesting, because this comes to the trans thing, and they said when they cast for Angel, they usually told people, play the person, not the demon. I'm paraphrasing here. And when you see cisgender actors playing transgender roles, they're playing the transgender person. They're not playing the character. And that's something that transgender actors do bring to the role. They're just playing a person.
Yes. I mean, if somebody has to play a role, a transgender role, it's hard enough to get into the role itself, and then they have to get into playing the transgender person playing the role, whereas it can be much done a little easier if you just hire somebody who's transgender.
Yeah, and usually the cisgender actors are doing kind of an over-exaggeration.
Right, the portrayal of how it comes across. But again, Julie, you're extremely good at acting. You're excellent. And I'm honored to represent you. And, you know, nobody's better than anybody else. And everybody should get a fair shot. And, okay, I hear that music. That means we have to take a break. This is Sid Levine, the Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC. We will be right back.
Attention small business owners, you know how hard it is to get funding to grow your business. Next Wave Funding is a direct funder that can help you get the cash you need when you need it, even if your credit is not that great. If you've been in business for over 1 year, have at least $12,000 in sales every month, Next Wave will purchase your future earnings and give you the money you need. It's as simple as that. This is by far the easiest and best funding for existing businesses. Call 800-430-4566. That's 800-430-4566.
Welcome to Geico's Motorcycle Meanderings.
I sure saved a lot of money by switching to Geico. I scored some big savings, and now I can use their mobile app 24/7 for all sorts of stuff. Life just makes sense now. What doesn't make sense is, why don't bikers order in drive-thrus more often? Is it because the name drive-thru feels exclusionary? They should call it drive or ride-thru. But then, I'd need three extra arms to hold my drink and burger and fries. Nah, I'm happy with just two arms.
Geico Motorcycle. Savings that make sense. Welcome to Geico's Motorcycle Meanderings.
I sure saved a lot of money by switching to Geico. I scored some big savings, and now I can use their mobile app 24/7 for all sorts of stuff. Life just makes sense now. What doesn't make sense is, why don't bikers order in drive-thrus more often? Is it because the name drive-thru feels exclusionary? They should call it drive or ride-thru. But then, I'd need three extra arms to hold my drink and burger and fries. Nah, I'm happy with just two arms.
Geico Motorcycle. Savings that make sense.
Attention small business owners. You know how hard it is to get funding to grow your business. Next Wave Funding is a direct funder that can help you get the cash you need when you need it, even if your credit is not that great. If you've been in business for over 1 year, have at least $12,000 in sales every month, Next Wave will purchase your future earnings and give you the money you need. It's as simple as that. This is by far the easiest and best funding for existing businesses. Call 800-430-4566. That's 800-430-4566.
Next week on McIntyre in the Morning, the world-famous Swedish chef joins us. That's McIntyre in the Morning. Get smart 5 to 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Oh. We're back. This is Sid Levine, the Sid Levine Show. And I am joined by Shante Carmel.
Hey, everybody. How you guys doing?
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right.
And Kente Scott, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
All right. And Julie's with us.
Hi.
And, okay, Shante.
Yes.
I've represented Shante for about 17 years.
And I am only 18 since
and you're
I was
only
18. One.
That's right.
That's amazing.
That's his baby. That's And I want to tell you that this is a very, very special girl. She's unbelievably talented actress, and can she sing? She was Martha Reeves in Motown and played Broadway.
I was. It was so much fun.
And you have a voice that's second to none. It is incredible.
You're very sweet. Thank you.
All right. So let me ask you, Shante.
Yes.
How did you get started as a singer and actress? How did that all come to be?
Born and raised in Los Angeles, which helps a lot. And I have an amazing set of parents. I think I spent a whole day at Disneyland and only listened to the Whitney Houston. At that time, we had these things called tapes. So I had a Walkman, and my parents were like, well, I think she wants to maybe sing, because that was like more interesting to me than Disneyland itself. And they got me started singing really young. I took my first international tour at 8 years old. I was a featured soloist with Crenshaw High School Elite Choir under the direction of Ira Stevenson. And I want to say the rest is history, but it's a long history.
That's great.
My parents are amazing. I love them so much.
Your parents are great.
Yeah.
It's so great to have your family behind you.
It is.
And that's something that's priceless. You tour.
Yes.
And you toured Dirty Dancing for, what was it, 6 months or?
Oh, it was like 11 months.
11
but
months,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Almost a year. It was almost a year, yeah.
Time's going by fast.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions to ask you. One quick question. Julie, do you sing?
I sing in character and animation, but I can't, like, professionally sing.
No, that's what I do too.
Oh,
no, just kidding.
I usually just, if I'm doing a character, like I can sing. I've had to do that for like video games and animation, but
okay.
No,
that's dope.
So let me ask you, Shantae. Mm-hmm. First of all, being on the road,
yes,
you're away from home for months on end, and you have communication by Skype and by phone. How does that affect your personal life? How does that affect?
You're just jumping in with the hard questions here.
But how does it affect you?
It affects me a lot. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to, I mean, some people make it work beautifully though. Don't get me wrong. There are families that travel with each other on the road. There are children that travel with their parents on the road. You can totally make it work, but it just really takes that very special person to understand what it is that you're trying to do. But the time away is very, very, very difficult for any relationship, friendships. You know, obviously I miss my family so much. We're such a close family. And even more difficult for personal relationships.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's hard.
The process of getting to Broadway, the process of the auditions, and the waiting, and then finally you're on a Broadway stage. Give us a little feel of what you go through.
Okay, I'll give you the Motown audition story because it's one of my favorite stories. Berry Gordy was amazing in that process, and it was life changing. I did 3 video auditions, because I'm here in Los Angeles and most of the, Broadway casting people are in New York. I did 3 video auditions, and then they brought me in to meet with, the stage manager and the musical director.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that in Anaheim because Motown was in Anaheim at the time. And then I didn't hear from them for weeks and I was pulling out all of my hair and it was so hard. And I was like crying at home under my covers, like, oh, I didn't book it. And then, I got my agent said to give him a call and say, hey, just let me know what's up. At least I can like stop thinking about it. And they were like, no. We want her. We just have one more final step. Sorry, we're taking so long. And then I get a call. Sid gets a call and they're like, we want her to meet with Mr. Gordy. And, Sid, who is awesome, he stays so nonchalant. He's like, oh, Shantae, you know, it may be next month. We don't know. A day later, they're like, Mr. Gordy wants you at his house at 4:00. I go up to his Bel Air estate. I sing. I do my sides. It's just me, him, an accompanist, and his assistant in Berry Gordy's living room, which is intimidating in itself. And at the end of it, he sits back and he looks at me. He goes, okay, you won. And the rest was history.
Wow.
I got to tour with Motown, the musical, for a year. And then our last stop on that tour was Broadway.
The night you sang, the first night you sang on Broadway, how did you feel? How did you get
through that? It was a high like no other. It was a high like no other. It was very scary, though, too, because the thing about when you're in a Broadway show and it's the opening night hype, anybody and everybody is there, especially with a show like Motown. All the greats come to see the show. You know, you're obviously, my boss is Berry Gordy, so he's always there. So that's always, mm-hmm. you know, something very, intense to perform for him a lot all the time. And it's a thrill like no other. I mean, like, my parents were in the audience. My parents have been behind me for years. And to be able to see my dream culminate into an actual, like, to live it, it was a feeling like no other.
Shante, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I got to hear a couple of lines. Can you sing something for
everybody? Oh, my gosh.
You got to hear this voice.
Oh, come now, calling out around the world. Are you ready for a brand new beat? Summer is here and the time is right for dancing in the street.
All right. Yes. Fantastic. That's great. All right. How do you keep your voice, like, strong and healthy? And how do you keep your body on tour healthy? I mean, you could catch a cold, you could get the flu, you still have to go on.
Yeah.
What do you do to keep your voice and your body healthy?
Sleep.
Sleep, huh?
A lot of sleep, as much rest as I can get when I can get it. And a lot of vocal rest, actually. There are things that are really weird to people. And I say, you can text me at a certain time in the day when I'm doing 8 shows a week, but, like, I actually don't start talking until, like, the afternoon.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a really intense. There are a lot of foods that I have to stay away from. Yeah. I actually have acid reflux really badly. So, if you know anything about that, coffee, yeah, alcohol, tomatoes, anything tomato based, get you all in here. So it's a really strict diet. It's kind of hard because you're not really at home every day to, cook your own meals. You have to eat out a lot. So it's hard. And then, I try to get into a gym every day.
Wow. I bet it is. Yeah. I mean, have you had to go on with the flu and with colds?
I have had to go on with no voice.
Oh my.
I was in Canada and, my understudy was at an audition in New York. So I couldn't call out. And it was like the most humbling experience ever.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very humbling. And it was like, I'm going to push through. I hope the audience is forgiving. And they were. They know that what we do is very difficult.
Wow. That's scary. Yeah. Talk about scary. Scary.
You know, you have all kinds of tricks, ginger, tea, all these remedies that'll right. Get you through song by song, literally. Like,
oh my
song
goodness.
Song by song. So.
Now, Shante, you also have a stress dog.
An emotional
dog.
Support animal.
Yes,
I
yes.
do.
So
he's amazing.
So what's the name of the dog?
His name is Sir Jeffrey.
Sir Jeffrey.
Yes.
So you don't like to fly, do you?
I do not like to fly.
So Sir Jeffrey
is the calmest, coolest dog you could ever have in
and
your
you
company.
Hold Sir Jeffrey real tight?
I do. Mm. Especially when the turbulence gets, I can't take it. I'm like a ball of nerves.
Is it a problem having a dog on tour?
No, no, not a problem. Not for me, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't problematic for me. It was
so
great.
It was easy?
Yeah, it was like I had a friend all the time.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
And it made me feel normal. It was like taking a little piece of home that got that little piece of home that actually got to come with me and, be with me every day. So it's amazing.
Somebody listening is in high school or college and they're ready to hit the musical theater or the theater road to see what they can do and get to Broadway. What advice would you give them?
Don't stop practicing. Even when you think you got it, just keep practicing, rehearsing, practicing, rehearsing, practicing, rehearsing. Because what I have learned and continue to learn that there is always somebody out there working harder than you. There's always somebody out there working. There were moments growing up, I had a pretty strict dad. He wouldn't let me go to this. Wouldn't let me go to a lot of stuff. I ended up in rehearsals a lot. Rather than, I was actually telling Kente that when I was in college, every weekend I actually came home. I had a record deal at that time and I was in the studio every weekend. So I missed out on a lot of the college experience. He was like, you missed out on a lot. I did. I missed out on a lot of, the parties and all of those things that other kids were doing. because, you know, so I want it. I want it. I wanted this life.
How bad do you want it? And what are you willing to do to sacrifice?
No, I've sacrificed everything.
To get it.
You
put it all on the line.
I've put it all on the line.
But you've made it
to
Broadway.
I have no life. Some lonely old me. By myself. All by my...
You have to fight all the guys away with shotguns.
I do not own a shotgun, guys. I don't own a shotgun.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. All I can tell you is, and Shanta, your dad and your mom are just fantastic parents.
They are. They're so
amazing.
And
they are behind you 1,000,000,000%. And it's been my pleasure to know them as well through all the process with you. You know, I always, when I see Shanta and I hear her sing, I always get, I'm not an emotional guy, but I get a little emotional because of everything we've been through for all the years and years and years.
It's been many years.
And to see Shanta get to the point where she gets to Broadway and tour, I mean, it's something else to see something that you both work so hard for, and it happens because of your work ethic.
Yeah.
And not just your singing, practicing your singing, but you're working out all the time and just keeping yourself in excellent shape because you're the instrument.
Yeah,
your
absolutely.
Whole body is the instrument.
Yep.
And you need to take care of that. I should take care of myself a little bit more, but we'll
I'm trying to get
later.
On her level. She's running marathons.
Yeah, Julie's running marathons. And
I'm like, I'm running a marathon before she got here today. I'm like, a marathon? I just got out of bed.
Technically half marathon, only 13.1 miles.
Only 13. In this heat, that's incredible. That's an accomplishment.
Well, listen, everybody, we'll be right back. This is Sid Levine, and this is the Sid Levine Show.
EO790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Governor Brown has declared a state of emergency for Los Angeles County after the La Tuna wildfire burned homes and prompted mandatory evacuations. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti says winds could cause the fire to reignite in areas where it has died down.
There have been some very strong winds, and there are still embers that are as much as 1,000 degrees still smoldering. So 50-mile-an-hour winds can pop those embers someplace. We do not have this fire contained, but we do have, I think, a good sense of, in the next day or two, how we can bring this fire to rest.
All evacuation orders have been lifted for residents in Sunland, Tujunga, Burbank, and Glendale. KABC SoCal weather. Cooler weather is coming. Showers and isolated thunderstorms are likely tonight. It will be mostly cloudy with overnight lows in the mid-60s to lower 70s. Labor Day, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Relying on monitoring your credit and bank statements to protect your identity?
Here we are as an innocent zebra scans the sea of tall grass.
That's like being an unsuspecting animal at the watering hole.
The zebra doesn't spot the stealthy lion and his big white teeth.
By just monitoring your credit, you could miss a hidden threat, like someone getting a loan in your name, or someone feasting on your 401k.
The lion leaps, and it doesn't look good for the zebra.
With LifeLock, you can see more. We detect a range of identity threats, even your info being for sale on the dark web. Have a problem? One of our U.S.-based specialists will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but we'll help you see more of what's trying to sneak up on you. Join for 10% off. Head to LifeLock.com and enter promo code NEWS. LifeLock. More detection, more protection.
Hurricane Harvey has devastated many lives in Texas, and those families need help. Camping World Supercenters is stepping up and launching a campaign to collect new and gently used clothing at all locations. Please donate shoes, shirts, pants, and or blouses. In addition, Camping World has started a matching campaign at their local stores. Donate any amount of money to the American Red Cross while you're in the store, and Camping World will match your donation up to a total of $2 million. So whether you can donate new or gently used items, or just give a dollar at the register, find a Camping World location near you and help.
Norm's Fruit Topped Hotcakes are back. Our original recipe buttermilk hotcakes topped with strawberries, blueberries, or cinnamon spiced apples. Served with eggs, bacon, sausage, and hash browns from $7.99. But for a limited time only. Norm'sRestaurants.com. Open 24/7.
Previously on The Drive Home.
You don't, there's nothing I could say that could change your mind.
Correct.
Why am I even talking to you?
I don't know. Why are you talking to me? I mean, you're like a bleeding heart liberal. Did he just hang up on us?
He did.
Okay, bye. I think he's mad that I didn't hire him for a friend of mine. I'm not sitting here getting in an argument over somebody who doesn't believe that a horrible murderer deserves to die.
I mean, look, there are times that we both deserve to be called crazy over something.
No doubt.
But that wasn't one of them.
The Drive Home. With Julian Barber and John Phillips.
Weekdays 3 to 6.
On Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hello, everybody. This is Sid Levine. And this is the Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC. Okay, everybody. We got a real treat for you right now. We have the real deal. One funny guy, one hell of a funny guy, Ken Tay Scott's in the house.
What's up, Sid?
It's no pressure, just following.
Yeah.
Singing of Shantae.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
That's right. There's no pressure for me talking either. So, Ken Tay, stand-up comedy.
Yes.
This is what you do to pay the bills.
This keeps the lights on. Keeps my daughter in that fine haberdashery that she wears.
Ah, yes.
I can say haberdashery.
You can say haberdashery. Okay. So, Kente, I got to ask you, how did you become a stand-up comic?
Well, I come from a family that plays the dozens, talk about each other, ripped each other really bad. If you're not in the family, you will cry. So one time, my mother came down and she was like, "I'm tired of you giving away these jokes for free." I went to UCLA. My father wanted me to be a doctor. I ended up being a stand-up comic. He's still getting over it.
He needs a doctor.
Yeah, he's like, "You should have told me that in eighth grade." I was like, "I tried to." So I kept getting sent home from school. And so she was like, "I'm not leaving LA until you go on stage somewhere." So after a week, I was like, "She's serious." So I went to the Comedy Store, did 3 minutes. They laughed enough for me to try it again 2 weeks later. And I took a workshop, a writing workshop, with a lady named Judy Carter, who used to do stand-up. And I randomly bought her book when I was at UCLA and looked on the back, and the number still worked. So I called the number and took her workshop for 6 weeks and learned how to write jokes and write a set. And that was my first five-minute showcase, was in her boot camp. And then my first show was in my hometown of Oakland, in a place called the End Zone, which was one of the toughest places in the city. They told me when I got on stage, they said, when they say "player, wrap it up," they mean "wrap it up." So luckily they let me get through my 10-minute set and been doing it ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
So doing stand-up comedy, you write your own material.
Yes, write my own material.
I mean, like in the Comedy Store, they have the open mic night, mm-hmm. but everybody in the audience is stand-up comics waiting to go on.
Yeah.
That's got to be the toughest, most brutal audience.
It's terrible.
There is. Have you ever had an audience that just plain and simply looked at you?
Never had anybody look at me, which is, and people are like, "Have you ever bombed?" And I'm like, "Yes, I've been booed before." Uh-oh.
Yeah. Got that in there. Okay.
Exactly. But I've never, the worst feeling is when they're just looking at you because they've tuned you out. They've stopped listening. They're not paying attention anymore. They're really just waiting for you to get done with whatever your set time is. And that makes 3 minutes feel like 30 minutes. So they've never done that. I did get booed off stage at the Comedy Store. It was a Def Jam audition. And it was right after Muhammad Ali held the torch for the 96 Olympics. And I did a Muhammad Ali joke. I didn't know Muhammad Ali's daughter was working at the Comedy Store.
Oh.
In the room. So a wave of boos came from the back and washed me off the stage.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So you tour, mm-hmm. and you go to different cities, yes. and different clubs, and each club is different, I'm
yes.
sure. And
mm-hmm.
you know which club you have to do which set of stuff, and
right.
so on and so forth. Do you write material all the time?
Yeah. Because as comics, we see the world differently. You know, we see it just a little bit more crazy. We say all the stuff that people think in their head. So every day there's material. And when you're on the road, for a weekend or whatever, and you go around the city, you see stuff, or you run into people, and it becomes part of your act.
Now, your comedy isn't like blue humor.
No, is it? It's not too blue. I do throw in a couple of cuss words in there, but I was never the guy in high school to tell what he did in the bedroom with his girlfriend, so I don't do it on stage now. So I can do clean comedy, I can do churches, I can do conventions, I do all of that.
That's great.
Yeah.
You could do cruise ships.
I do cruise ships,
because I heard if you say one swear on a cruise ship.
On the early show. Because they have two shows now.
Oh, okay.
The early show, they have the kids. It's 7:30. Yeah. You get ran out of there really quickly. And then the second show, you have to like cuss a lot. Like if you don't cuss enough, they'll tell you, we need you to spice it up a little bit.
Oh, but what do you think of comedians that just plain and simply just for shock value just swear?
I grew up idolizing Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy and George Carlin and those type of guys who use cuss words. It's like you're cooking. The joke is the meat, is the steak, and you have to have the meat there no matter how much seasoning you put on it. Richard Pryor, George Carlin, the great, use cuss words as seasoning. A lot of comics now use cuss words as the meat, and you're just eating Lowry's seasoning salt. So you can get high blood pressure and die.
Now, you're an actor as well, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you obviously must be pretty good at improv.
Yes.
So when you're doing a set, you're doing your stand-up comedy, and there's somebody in the audience that won't stop talking.
That is the best.
What do you do to them?
Oh, that's the best. Because then you can just make them the show. It's because two things have to happen. If you're on stage, you have to control the stage. And the heckler is, one, messing up your set, so he's throwing off your routine. They didn't come to see him, so you shut him down. Hecklers make my breath smell better. It's like Listerine. I just eat them for lunch. I'm like, oh, he's so minty. Yeah, so you just hit them with three or four good ones, and they'll stop. And if they keep going, then I don't have to do my set. I can just do 30 minutes on you, sir.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just plain and simply zero in on that guy or that woman, and you nail them until they shut up.
Yeah, you nail them until they shut up. Now they have security that comes and kicks the hecklers out, which I'm like, please, let them stay. I don't have to work that hard. I can just talk about him.
My gosh. I mean, I want to tell you, the stand-up comedy is one of the toughest things to do on stage. That is, you're all alone.
Yeah.
And how do you test your jokes out? Like, how do you know if they're funny?
I test my jokes out on when I started, it was my friends and family. I go to the barbershop every week, try it out there. I still go to open mics. And when I go to open mics, I don't go for laughs. I go for... So if they give me that, I'm like, okay, that has potential. I can work with that. And now I put them in the set. As I'm doing a show, I'll try out new stuff after my tried and true stuff has worked. So I can try a new one in there. And if it doesn't hit like the rest of them, then I go back to the tried and true stuff. And if it works, then you just add it.
Wow. You know? Julie, have you ever thought of doing stand-up?
Oh, no, not at all. No? I have a lot of friends who do stand-up, but... No. I think I'm that funny with a script. I don't think I could never riff on something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's a science to it. Like it's some comics that never riff. It's some comics that just do just their set forever. And once you learn how to write a joke, every joke has a setup, every joke has a punchline, then you can build a set. It's just like I tell people, it's like playing golf. Everybody looks at Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth and all these guys and be like, I could hit a ball like that. That's what they say about comedians. Like, you see somebody make people laugh and say, I can do that. And I say, go do it. And then after you take that L, come on back and we can talk about how I teach a boot camp now on helping up-and-coming comics or people who've never done comedy before build a five-minute set. I just giving back the same thing I learned when I was starting out.
Some people are funny, but they can't write their own material.
Yes.
So they pay other comics to write the jokes for them.
Yeah. That's another... hidden stream of income that a lot of comics have who may not be able to deliver the jokes as well, but are some of the... Paul Mooney wrote for Richard Pryor.
Right.
Keenan Ivory Wayans wrote for Eddie Murphy. So, and Robert Townsend. So it's a way that you can tell who, Kevin Hart has five writers right now, and they are very well paid. They are millionaires off of just writing for him.
Yeah.
But you have to know that you can write a joke for somebody else. Every joke I write, I can't tell because of how I deliver it. But I can write a joke for somebody else, and they can have a ball with it.
Have you ever heard another comic steal your joke?
Oh, my, yes.
And how do you react to that? Do you go over and tell them, what are you taking my jokes for?
When I was younger, it used to be like, man, he stole my joke. Then I realized a couple of things. One, we think a lot alike, so it may be something that is similar. But I did a show one time, and my ex-manager was there. And I did it. I have a joke that was on YouTube about my uncle who's a pimp, and he had to be a substitute teacher. And he teaching his class, and his word problem was, if I have six women running, doing 3 hours on the corner, and they each make $20 a trick, how much do they make at the end of the night? And nothing. I'm a pimp. I get everything. I was hosting the show, and a lady got up there and did the exact same joke. And my manager, I wasn't even paying attention. My manager came up and was like, she's doing your exact joke. I just watched that joke. And she did it verbatim, except for she changed uncle to daddy. And I was like, I don't even use that joke anymore. But I did tell her, you know, that joke sounds a lot like mine. And if they get extra defensive, like, whatever. You know, like, I made that joke up on my own. I've never heard your joke before. I didn't say you heard my joke. I just said it sounds a lot like mine.
Well, Kente, all I can say is that a lot of people have called me a pimp, but I'm an agent. I'm no pimp. I am an agent. Remember that.
Exactly. One There's client, a difference.
I have a license for this.
One client just comes up to me, hey, how you doing, my pimp?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, thanks a lot for that. I appreciate that.
Makes that awkward, and though.
Especially when there are other people in the office. Yeah. That's really great for the
we
people
We didn't know
here.
You did that on the side, see it?
Shante, you ever think you could do that?
No.
All right, listen, we got to take another break. This is Sid Levine, The Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC. We'll be right back.
Running low on the stuff you need? Time for a Target run. We're here for all the big moments and the little ones, too, like gathering around the grill with hot Labor Day deals. Sunday and Monday only, get Tender Choice Baby Back Ribs, only $2.49 a pound. Raspberries, 2 for $4. Sizzling prices on soda, hot dogs, and chips. And a 24-pack of Market Pantry Water for only $1.99. Plus, Dixie Paper Plates are always a great deal at $2.99. Target run and done. Pricing may vary. Restrictions may apply.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Relying on monitoring your credit and bank statements to protect your identity?
Here we are as an innocent zebra scans the sea of tall grass.
That's like being an unsuspecting animal at the watering hole.
The zebra doesn't spot the stealthy lion and his big white teeth.
By just monitoring your credit, you could miss a hidden threat, like someone getting a loan in your name, or someone feasting on your 401k.
The lion leaps, and it doesn't look good for the zebra.
With LifeLock, you can see more. We detect a range of identity threats, even your info being for sale on the dark web. Have a problem? One of our U.S.-based specialists will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but we'll help you see more of what's trying to sneak up on you. Join for 10% off. Head to LifeLock.com and enter promo code NEWS. LifeLock. More detection, more protection.
Okay, this is Sid Levine, The Sid Levine Show. I'm here joined by Julie, Shante, and Kente. We're having a great time here. If anybody would like to call in and ask any of us any questions you want to ask, the number is 1-800-222-5222. That's 1-800-222-5222. I got to tell you that this is an experience for me that I've not done before. I'm almost 60 years old, and here I am on the radio with a radio show. But, you know, you gotta do everything in life, and you just gotta jump in and see where it takes you. And, that's what I do. So I wanna ask Kente first. Your education, you went to
UCLA.
UCLA, and you got a degree in?
I got a degree in biology.
In biology.
It's beautiful in the frame at my parents' house. Like, here you go. Yes, and I actually took the MCAT, and I was like, because my father wanted me to be a doctor. I don't know why. And I was like, yeah, but I don't like blood, so I don't know what I was going to work. But I took the MCAT, and I was like, I don't want to do this. So I called my father, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be a stand-up comic and an actor. Love you, bye.
So, Shante?
Yes.
Education-wise?
I have my theater degree, my bachelor's from UC Santa Barbara. UC system in the house.
Yeah.
From UCSB.
UC Santa Barbara.
Yes.
Was that fun going to UC Santa Barbara?
It was great.
Cool?
It was great. Got in, got out.
It's
great. I actually got to study abroad as well. So I also went to Cambridge study theater for an abroad program through the UC system. I also got to study at UCLA my senior year. They didn't offer African American theater history at UCSB, so they allowed me to come and study that down at UCLA for a couple of quarters, which was amazing as well. So
great. Julie?
I went to San Jose State and eventually got my degree in theater arts, but I started in molecular biology because I'm a total genetics freak.
Yeah.
I've been fascinated with genetics ever since I was little. And even to this day, even though I didn't go into the field, I love reading genetic studies. I was following the Human Genome Project as that was going on towards the early 2000s. And even now, I keep myself reading a lot of medical studies because I like to keep in touch. I like to have real good scientific talking points whenever I talk to people who are not understanding the transgender thing. And I'm like, well, here are these medical studies that prove that this might be the origin. They found this in certain brain structures. And when we have treatment, this is what happens. And when we don't, this is what happens. And here we have all the medical studies that prove it.
they just stand like this. And, okay.
Yeah. Usually they just come down to bias. And it's like, I threw 15 different medical studies at you. How are you saying that it just doesn't matter? It's boggles my mind sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you my educational background. I graduated Troy High School in Fullerton, and I went one day to Fullerton Junior College and got kicked out. And that was the extent.
Now you drive a Ferrari. Of,
right. and that was my extent of my education. I went to Fullerton Junior College, bought all the books, and had this huge lecture hall. It was about 100 kids in it, and the teacher was lecturing about what he expected the students to do and not to do. And he said, are there any questions? And it was in September, so I raised my hand and said, can you turn the air conditioner up? And he said, get the hell out of here.
Wow.
So I said, okay. And when I got back to my car, I got a parking ticket. So I said to myself, this isn't for me. This is a sign. These are omens.
Wow.
So that did it. I never continued on, and I sold all the books back and lost about 50% of the money. And that was it. Cause I know it's terrible to say, but I just gotta be honest, I hated school. I don't like anybody telling me what to do.
It's not for everybody.
And you know, it's funny cause, you know, people say when you're in business for yourself, you don't work for anybody else. Like, nobody's your boss. That's not true. Everybody's your boss. And you work for everybody. You work for the building, for the rent. You work for the telephone company to pay the bill. And you just work and work and work for everybody else. And sometimes you get lucky and make a few bucks, but you have to really love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line. And I can tell everybody here really loves what they do. And even though you can't see her, I want to say a shout out to Marissa, who's doing the live stream here. She's sitting in a chair with a couple of iPods, whatever. And, you know, these girls in the office are so young. Bianca, how you doing? Bianca, where are you? You know, they've introduced me to all these different things like Periscope. I said, what's a Periscope? A submarine? And they've introduced me to all these things that you can do on Facebook and Instagram and
Snapchat.
Twitter and Snapchat. I was calling it Snapjack. And everybody said, don't call it that. It's Snapchat, whatever it is. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, because in my day, when we went to school in the 70s, there was no such thing as the internet,
right? Oh, yeah.
Let alone all this other stuff.
Yeah, they still had landlines back then.
Yes, and people only dreamed of what it would be like to see who you're talking to. They thought that was like something that was just never going to happen. And you know, when it did happen, like nobody made like a real big thing of it.
Yeah.
It's like you're looking at somebody on your cell phone. And in the 70s and the 60s or whatever, even in the 80s, that was like, what's that?
That was a big thing, yeah.
Yeah, and people have skirted over it like it's no big thing.
Well, here's probably why. Where are the flying cars?
When
you're supposed to be able to talk to yourself, talk to somebody on your phone,
right.
You're supposed to have a flying car.
Every movie had a flying car. Yeah.
Back to the Future, the Jetsons, everybody. Yeah. Where are the flying cars? Everybody's still driving on the street. I need a flying car. I need my flying car.
I mean, I'll never see in my lifetime a lot of the things of people like flying to the moon or flying to Mars or, you know, going there on a vacation for a couple of weeks or what have you. Or maybe it'll be like the Star Trek where you stand in something and the molecules go to where they have to go. And of course, mine would be heavier because I'm overweight. Everything has changed so much, and being in the office and being introduced to all this technology and things that like a 16-year-old kid can do that I in my wildest dreams don't know exist.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like, man, I'm old.
And they make you feel so bad when you ask them to. Like, how do I connect? Oh, you just do this, push the button. Oh, fine.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, my 10-year-old nephew's the worst. He fixes everything on my iPad for me. It's great. I'm like, take that. Fix it.
I've always thought an interesting subject for a documentary, thinking that I'm come from the generation, the last generation that knows a world without the internet.
Mm.
I always thought it would be a really interesting documentary, like 20, 30 years down the line, to have a bunch of people in my generation try to explain what the world was like before. It's like that first initial section of Interstellar where it's like, oh yeah, back then.
Yeah. Well, I remember actors, you know, when I first started in 86, you'd have to reach an actor, and you'd have beepers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you'd have to call that beeper, and it was an emergency. You keep beeping the person, and they go, I got to get off the freeway and get to a payphone. And then they call you from the payphone, and then you'd have to beep them again, and they'd have to get off and get to a payphone again. And that was the only way you could reach people.
You could reach them.
There was no other way to reach people except by beeper. There was no such thing as the sides, the pages of the script. I mean, sometimes they would have to pick them up at the casting office before they auditioned, a day or so. I mean, there was no such thing as scanning the sides or emailing them forward.
You had to go to, like, FedEx, Kinko's,
yeah, Kinko's
and get a fax.
That's right.
And pay like $5.
I remember in the late 80s, I was debating whether you get a fax machine, and it was like $450 bucks then.
And it was huge.
The thing weighed about 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I don't know if this is going to work out or not. Maybe it's a waste of money, and it's a good thing I got it. The only thing is you'd put pictures, people would want to see pictures scanned in it, and like the head would get stuck, so you'd have a forehead this big, and then nobody could really see the picture or the resume. You couldn't see. And in the old days, you know, we call it the breakdowns, the parts that you'd have to submit on. And as an agent, it wasn't emailed. It was delivered 10 at night to 6 in the morning under your door, and you'd get the breakdowns. And then you'd have to rush like crazy to do them, pull the pictures, and then you'd have to get a delivery service to come 3 times a day and make sure that they picked it up at the right time, and you begged them to deliver them as fast as they could, and you'd have to do that each and every day. And it was just nothing like it is today, where you just get on the computer and it's done.
Yeah.
And, you know, people still come to the office and say, you use a Rolodex?
You have a Rolodex?
I do. I use a Rolodex.
Great.
It's especially changed a lot in voiceover, where now it used to be that, you know, you had the tape and you sent that in. And now they're getting so many submissions just from MP3s and WAV
from
files.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah, that it's just like so many people are submitting, and you have all these services online like Voices and Voice Bunny and stuff like that. And it's just, well, changing world. Well,
I got to say, you guys, fantastic. Thank you so much, Julie, for coming, Shante for coming, Kente for coming, Marissa for doing this, streaming it live. I forgot to take the phone calls, but that's okay.
I know.
Sorry about that.
No, so, nobody.
No, just forgot to do it. So I will just thank everybody big time. And Keith in the booth, one sound effects, huh? You got one you can give me now? Can you give me one? Okay. Give me one now that you haven't given me. All right, I'm talking. Okay. All right. Well, Keith's been fantastic in the engineer there, and I just am so happy to do this, and thank everybody so much for listening. It's quite a joy to have people comment and send me emails. Some of them I don't really want to read, but sending me emails of how great the job they think I've done, and they can't believe it's been my my first time doing this. Okay, this is Sid Levine, the Sid Levine Show. We will see you next Sunday, 7 o'clock at night, KABC 790. Have a great week, everybody.
This show furnished by Sid Levine